Welcome to the Workplace Minute, powered by H3 HR Advisors and sponsored by Paychex, one of the leading providers of HR, payroll, retirement, and software solutions for businesses of all sizes. My name is Steve Bowes. HR organizations should increase focus on employee growth and well-being. In a recent Harvard Business Review article, authors Peter Capelli and Rania Naime argue that HR organizations need to return to their traditional focus of employee advocacy, particularly in the areas of growth and development, as well as overall well-being, representing a shift away from the relentless cost management and cycles of restructuring and downsizing that have impacted so much of human capital management in the last few decades. In the article, HR's New Role, the authors make the compelling argument that in order to meet the fundamental challenge of hiring and retaining good people, HR needs to return to its traditional role of taking care of employees. It must play a leading role in persuading top management to treat employees better and to change company policies on pay, training, layoffs, vacancies, outsourcing, and restructuring. The need for this return to an employee-centered view of HR, the article contends, is the recent history of the HR function. While in earlier years, HR was generally seen as employee-focused, things shifted over the past 50 years. Driven by the stagflation of the 1970s, the recession of the early 1980s, and more recently the Great Recession, HR's focus increasingly shifted to relentless cost-cutting. Decades of slack labor markets made slashing HR expenses easy because it was hard for people to quit. Pay and every other kind of benefit, including training and development, got squeezed, but work demand still went up, and job security overall fell. Today, with labor markets remaining tight as a result of the growth coming out of the pandemic era, and with survey after survey showing employee stress and burnout on the rise, HR has to go back to its traditional orientation and focus and advocate for employees when talking about human capital to CEOs and other leaders, whom, the authors contend, don't often truly understand the negative impact on organizational results from decisions like downsizing, restructuring, or keeping open positions unfilled. Some key recommendations for HR to make the case to the C-suite on behalf of employees and their growth, development, and well-being include, first, making the true cost of HR practices clear. One critical step HR can take to get the C-suite to alter its course is to show these leaders what the true cost of current practices are and illustrate the value of the human capital in the organization. To that end, HR should provide a dashboard that includes metrics on turnover and what it costs the company, information on why employees are quitting, and figures on vacancies filled from within the organization. It should also include data on employee well-being, such as absenteeism rates, incidence of new illnesses and disabilities, usage of employee assistance programs, and levels of commitment and engagement. Next, HR needs to address employee stress. HR should establish standard credible metrics for employee stress and burnout and discuss them alongside financial and production figures. The priority should be on reducing the causes of stress, not just monitoring it or alleviating its symptoms. Implementing wellness programs to help employees manage stress is like building trauma centers to deal with the effects of car accidents after the fact. And third, HR needs to rebuild internal labor markets. One effective way for companies to increase flexibility and reduce employee anxiety is to retrain workers and give them opportunities to transfer into promising areas of the organization. HR can play a central role in making the case for these practices. Internal job markets not only cost very little, but also save enormous amounts of money by reducing turnover and the need to hire from outside the organization. And the benefits of retraining employees are significant because it prevents companies from replacing good employees with people with different skill sets who often must be paid even more. In summary, the authors argue that over the past 40 years, organizations have built HR practices and operating cultures based on the notion that squeezing employee costs and HR resources had little overall downside. Some of the cost cutting has been indirect, by not filling vacancies and letting the remaining employees figure out on their own how to get their additional work done. But some of it was direct, like shutting training departments and shrinking development budgets. That model is no longer working, yet companies continue with it out of inertia and because costs like turnover, unfilled positions, and disengaged employees have no specific line items in the financial accounting systems of enterprises in the United States and many other countries. For organizations to succeed in the long term and for employees to thrive, an assertive, data-driven, and confident HR needs to be at the forefront of employee advocacy and return HR to its place as the stewards and guardians of employee success and well-being. It's a fascinating piece and an influential publication, and it will be interesting to see how it influences HR and leadership in the coming years. We will continue to cover the important topics and trends in the workforce here on the HR Happy Hour Media Network. That's it for the Workplace Minute, powered by H3 HR Advisors.